I'm John Batchelor. The First Amendment, free speech, the United States of America in the 21st century. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. In Defining Ideas, his essay features this challenge. You will recall in the recent unhappiness and tragedy of anti-Semitism, there was an Instagram post associated with Harvard University, signed by or said to have been agreed by many organizations on campus. And the post began with this sentence. We, the undersigned student organizations, hold the Israeli regime entirely responsible for all unfolding violence. End quote. Richard, a very good evening to you. If I understand your presentation correctly, that sentence means entirely different things if it's voiced at a private university as compared to a public university. How so, Professor? Good evening.
Yes. Well, it's actually extremely complicated. First, you have to set up the basic architecture. And the first distinction that you have is a distinction between public and private. And under this reading, if you're looking at the First Amendment, Congress has been read to cover the states, and it's been read to cover judicial decisions, but it's never been read to cover private decisions. So if Harvard decided that it wanted to bounce those people because of the statement they made and could give reasons or no reasons for it, they would be entitled to do so. The public side's a bit more complicated because the United States government has two roles, as does all the states. On the one hand, they could be external parties who regulate what you want to do and how you do it. And so they come along and they say to a private party, you cannot say this. And for that, there would be First Amendment protections. But the other thing that a government does is it runs many complicated institutions, including universities of one kind or another, and they have to speak. And the rule has always been, if you are running a particular institution, you're not a regulator, you're a business. And so therefore, you have to have greater freedom under the First Amendment, even if you're a government agency than otherwise. The leading case is called Connick and Meyer. And in that particular situation, there was an employee of a New Orleans police department who wanted to speak out against the policy of the department. And the Supreme Court made it very clear that if you're trying to talk as an employee, you can't rat out your employer in public. What you have to do is to follow the rules of the game. But if what you want to do is to speak about some unrelated issues, generally they can't touch you. And so if you were a public university and you had this post, you would not be in a position where the government or the administrators would be powerless to do things. What you would have to do is to pass a higher threshold to stop it, to show reasonable cause, whereas in the private university, you don't have to show any cause at all. That's the legal situation. Practical situation, of course, is somewhat different. If you're trying to run a university and you constantly interfere with all sorts of preferred speech of one kind or another, you're not going to be worth your salt. So the question then is, does this particular statement qualify as the kind of thing that should be subject to a protection? And my view about it is no. I mean, you just look at every word in what you said. They talk about the Israeli regime. What they're trying to say is it's not a legitimate government. It's sort of like some kind of a dictatorial operation, which has no legitimacy whatsoever. And so therefore, if you got rid of it, it would be all the good. And then what you do is to say they're entirely responsible for the events that happened. Well, what were the events? They started off with the deliberate mauling of innocent people, innocent women, innocent child, innocent men, by a group of people who came over the border and hacked them to death. Well, if you start with the law, that's a prima facie case of assault. It's a prima facie case of violence. It's the most vile criminal activity that you could possibly imagine. And so it becomes utterly absurd to say that you do these terrible things to other people and they're entirely responsible to what happens for them. So what must they mean by that? They must mean, well, this thing has to be explained by context. And their view of the context is that there is an illegitimate Jewish regime which has imposed all sorts of terrible things on Gaza and on Israel. There's a different context, which is much more powerful, which is what happens is commerce is totally corrupt. What it wants to do is to subject its own people to all sorts of violence and to restriction and to milk them for heavy taxes and then try to keep their position at home by beating up and killing innocent people. That's inexcusable. And if I'm running a university and I'm asked to figure out what do I say about that, I said, this is the most outrageous, obscene, foul-mouthed statement that you could imagine. We're going to take it down. So you can't do it because you had this under the Harvard label, and we're going to punish you. We may expel you. We may do something or other. We're very worried about due process, and we're trying to give you all that stuff. But we are not going to say that we're bound to have viewpoint neutrality when you make a statement like this. And indeed, even if we were bound, a statement like this is absolutely calculated to make an open invitation for people to commit violence and other kinds of acts against those people whom we regard as moral degenerates. And that's the way it played out. If you look at this at the day, you knew it was causing trouble. And then you see everything that starts going on at Harvard, and it leads to a huge cascade along with other similar statements for that. And no private university, as far as I'm concerned, has to tolerate that stuff, and it should act. What happened at Harvard, what happened at everywhere else, is these universities misread the Calvin report, and they said, we have to offer a neutral platform for everybody. That's not what it said. It said, if it turns out there's an issue of the day that's public that doesn't involve our universities, we do that. But if it's something that is a crisis on the university, something that we've done or our people have done, then we have to take a stand. And what the Calvin report says is you're obligated to counter that. Strong word. But in general, the great mistake that everybody made, statements like this go up around the world, and nobody in any of these institutions is prepared to do anything other than to dissociate themselves from the statement, but they're not prepared to condemn it as such in the sense of imposing sanctions in the university's name. When the student at NYU posted something, pretending that she had the authority of all the student body, just the way the Harvard letter pretended that it had all the authorization to these student organizations, Winston Strong fired her. They got rid of her. They're a private party. That's exactly what they should have done. NYU could have done the same thing. Harvard could do the same thing. And so what happens is if you start letting trash like that get out and replicate itself, you're going to have a full-scale crisis. And this is not just a prediction anymore. It's now a reality. Harvard is an armed camp that has been taken over. And it turns out that the administration there is complicit in everything that happens when people violate all the time, place, and manner rules and go about all sorts of ways in which a combination of speech, action, words, and anything else that you could imagine is attempt to try to take over these universities and turn them into a platform of Hamas and Palestinian propaganda.
Richard speaks of the Calvin Report. This is a report of a faculty committee, chairmanship Harry Calvin Jr., committee appointed by president of the University of Chicago, George W. Beadle. It's dated November 1967. Its mission was to prepare a quote, a statement on the university's role in political and social action. Richard, be careful of your mic, okay? Be careful.
Okay.
Now, Richard, I have an example that I want to understand correctly. On Princeton University campus, I watched a video of a gathering of young people led by somebody with a bullhorn, and they were chanting unacceptable remarks that at the time were associated with anti-Semitism. What I understand you to say is because that is a private university, it was within the authority of the administration, meaning the president and the board, to expel or chastise or limit or constrain that chanting by that bullhorn. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, look, they're on university property. The university can let them in if they satisfy certain conditions, including those of decorum and so forth. They haven't done this. They know that this is a violation of the rule. They've been told that repeatedly. And they continue to act in an effort to intimidate everybody else. What you do is you, at the very least, shut down the activity and remove them from the campus. And then if they persist, what you do is you start subjecting them to criminal sanctions or civil sanctions of one corner or another. I mean, these things are criminal trespasses, right? If you look at it in the way, I think of the invasions of the White House by a bunch of people who weren't authorized to go there. It wasn't an insurrection, I don't believe, but it certainly was a criminal trespass, either severe or not. Well, if you're taking selfies, I'm not particularly worried about it, but I do think it should be punished. But if what you're doing is trying to disrupt and to intimidate, that's a much more serious situation. Right. So I think that Princeton should have actually referred it to the public authority.
Now let's go to a public university. What is the difference there about this sentence being promulgated?
Well, I think in this particular case, there's no difference whatsoever. As I said, public universities are constrained so as to be a bit more respectful of private views and such. But it doesn't seem to me that when you're trying to figure out what you're allowed to say, that you're going to allow to talk about things that are basically open incitements to violence, and that they have to be able to run their administration in that particular fashion. And so if it turns out that it has long-standing neutral time, place, and manner rules, all which are being violated by the people who are doing this, you can do that. Now, the tricky thing in the Harvard case or in the public university case is to what extent do you associate the speakers who are doing one thing with the agitators who are doing another thing on campus? The effort on the part of many people to protect the speakers, say, well, they're just talking and somebody else is doing the doing. But it turns out, I think there's virtually a huge amount of coordination that takes place between the advertisement campaign on the one hand and the physical invasions of property on the other. So I would link the two of them together. And at that point, I think a public university has exactly the same rights as a private university, even though I don't think, for example, it would have the rights, to give you an illustration, to exclude a club of gay members, whereas I actually wrote a brief on behalf of Yeshiva University, which says if it believes that gay rights are inconsistent with biblical situation, they can refuse to recognize those organizations and recognize all others. And I was basically told that this was wrong by the court. And what Yeshiva did is they shut down all their clubs because it didn't want to have to do something that was against their religious beliefs. I don't think they should ever be forced to that kind of choice. It's a money or your life kind of choice. I have a gun at your head and, you know, you can voluntarily give me money and I'll put the gun away. That's the kind of thing that's happened. And I think on a public university, it'd be absolutely outrageous to say that, oh, you could come here, but we're not going to let a gay club come. Now, it turns out in the actual law, things have gotten very, very bad because what happens when Hastings was Hastings Law School before they changed its name, what they did is they basically wanted to have a rule which required the Christian students to admit gay students who wanted to undermine their mission. And so this is one of the delicate things that happens in a public university, which is you have some organizations which by definition have to have an exclusive membership. If you want to be a part of the gay club, you have to support their missions. You want to be part of an Orthodox Jewish association, have to support their mission. So what happens is on a public university, there are certain mission-driven operations that you have to accept and let them exclude other members. Whereas if you're talking about the chess club, you don't have that particular problem. So there the key response is you let the gay club on, you let the Christian League club get on that particular place. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in an utterly terrible opinion some years ago, said, well, you know, we can condition your access to a public university on your willingness to follow this particular norm. And that's what you can do. If you're a public university, you don't have the absolute right to exclude. And so therefore, every condition that you wish to attach on entry has to be subject to some examination. And basically, to force somebody to take somebody into their organization whose viewpoint is different from that of the organization should never be done. But if it's an organization like the chess club, which doesn't have a view on politics, it can't exclude Jews or Muslims or Christians or anybody else within the framework of that university. And so it's a very complicated trichotomy that you're dealing with, but it's a very simple case, given the quote that you just gave to me, which is pure race hatred, complete falsehood, and in fact, an open invitation to violence. Now, does places like Harvard recognize that invitations to violence? Invitations to violence is something you have to worry about? The answer is absolutely they do that. But what they do is they attach the potential for violence to all sorts of innocent actions, like giving speeches which are close to global warming. And so what happens is the private universities have two problems. One, they're hypocritical in what it is that they think is going to be a source of violence, and they punish the wrong people for the wrong reason and let some true miscreants get away with a lot of stuff that should never be allowed. It's a very unstable and very unhappy position.
Professor Richard Epstein, writing and defining ideas about the controversy on private and public university campuses. We're going to turn to another controversial matter in Washington, D.C. The word is impeachment. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.